we're going to be discussing over the next several mornings, Chapter 17 from Canto 3. Chapter 17 is Victory of Hiranyaksha over all the directions of the universe. Victory to the demons. The previous chapter described in detail the pregnancy of Aditi at an inauspicious time, the mourning of Kashyapa. This is because of the inauspicious time. Two demons will be born, twins, and when they were born, the whole universe became dark. One of the external signs of inauspiciousness. I remember from reading this one time, we were coming back in New York. We were coming back from Harinam in the city in Manhattan. And we crossed over the Manhattan Bridge. And just as we were reaching Brooklyn, it was early afternoon, we were coming back for lunch, so bright, sunny day. All of a sudden, it was like dark as night. Not completely, like twilight, very, very, very dark. It lasted for about 15 minutes, and then it was bright again. So I thought of this passage of the Bhagavatam. Some big demon is taking birth in Brooklyn. And there's others. The refinement of auspicious and inauspicious signs is far from the consciousness of worldly people today. But like when Parshuram was going to confront Ram and Dasarath and the whole entourage. Dark, fierce wind, howling sounds, shrieking of the birds, and you know, this and that. So, kind of like a movie. But here, this isn't a movie, this is the universe became dark. So, the demigods who are responsible for the affairs of the universe, they normally carry on the affairs of the universe. But when something like that happens, they went to Daddy, Lord Brahma, and they expressed their concern, and part of it was selfish and part of it was service. And Brahma said, don't worry. He said three things. He said, don't worry. This is an arrangement of the personality of Godhead because nothing can happen without the arrangement of the personality of Godhead. The circumstances beyond my control. Another interesting point is he says that the demons, these two, have become so powerful that they have eclipsed or subsumed or diminished the power of the demigods. You can't do anything either. I can't do anything, you can't do anything, but the Supreme Lord can and will. So have no fear. So that's how chapter 16 ends. And here's how 17 begins. Sri Maitreya said, the demigods, the inhabitants of the higher planets, were freed from all fear upon hearing the cause of the darkness explained by Brahma, who was born from Vishnu. Thus, they all returned to their respective planets. Purport. The demigods, who are denizens of the higher planets, are also very much afraid of incidents such as the universe is becoming dark, so they consulted Brahma. This indicates that the quality of fear exists for every living entity in the material world. The four principal activities of material existence are eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. The fear element exists also in the demigods. On every planet, even in the higher planetary systems, including the moon and the sun, as well as on this earth, the same principles of animal life exist. Otherwise, why are the demigods also afraid of the darkness? The difference between the demigods and ordinary human beings is that the demigods approach the authority, whereas the inhabitants of this earth defy authority. If people would only approach the authority, then every adverse condition in the universe would be rectified. Arjuna was also disturbed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, but he approached the authority, Krishna, and his problem was solved. The conclusive instruction of this incident is that we may be disturbed by some material condition, but if we approach the authority who can actually explain the matter, then our problem is solved. The demigods approached Brahma for the meaning of the disturbance, and after hearing from him, they were satisfied and returned home peacefully. I think I'm going to read some extra verses. This is the main topic to be expanded. Well, I'll just stay with this one, text one. Chapter 16, Bhagavad Gita, The Divine and Demoniac Nature, has principles of what's the distinction between the two, some of the characteristics of the two, and the Puranas take the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, or the eternal teachings of human life, and expand them to illustrate them in historical events, histories. Very simple example. One can read a book about ideal household life, and then that's one system of education. Then another is, here's an ideal household couple or family. And there may be multiple ones, and so there's characteristics that are different, features that are different, ways of interacting that are somewhat different, but there are principles that are in place. And then you can take the teaching and you learn about the teaching from the application of the teaching. The Puranas serve to explain or show by example. Something like in my college days with chemistry. You learn something from the textbook, you hear about it in the lecture hall, and then you go to the lab and you put this together with that at this temperature in this manner, and voila. You can see it happening. That's part of the purpose of chemistry lab. So there's the laboratory of life. We can hear of some principle and then see within the Bhagavatam some principle, and then we're meant to apply it in our life. In very simple terms, Prabhupada is making this, in this purport, this contrast between the demigods and the demons, or ordinary people. In one sense, ordinary people are demons, provided, or they can be demigods, or suras, or divine, versus demoniac, simply on the principle of when something perplexing arises, you go to the authority. The whole of the Vedas, has one purpose. The whole of the Vedas, one purpose is to know Krishna. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. However, some people don't want to know Krishna. In fact, they're in the material world because there's aversion to Krishna. Raga, dvesha, samutena, dvandva, mohena, bharata. But the purpose of the, since the purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna, and people of this world are averse to Krishna, that's why they're in the material world, then there's intermediate steps. Like, some people ask, if there's only one thing, if you, the conclusion is just render to Krishna, that just say one thing. But some people aren't ready. You noticed? Some people aren't ready. And so the 90%+ of the Vedas is for those people that aren't ready. But to encourage them to something they are ready for, and that is the necessities of life, to fulfill their wants and what they think are their needs, there's a whole system of recognizing authority. And that's the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, where by this yajna or that procedure or that sacrifice or that something or other, then one's desires can be met or fulfilled. And in the process, recognizing authority. Interesting. Hiranyakashipu, who wanted to become immortal, went to undergo austerities to get immortality from Brahma. He's recognizing some authority. But he's defiant of that authority. That very authority, and the authority of that authority, he is defiant of. It's quite irrational. He wants to become Lord, and he who is Lord, he has aversion to, yet he's dependent upon. It's quite irrational. So, and the power of the Hiranyakashipus, or the tiny Hiranyakashipus, they derive their power from the same source that Prahlad derives his power from, or that anyone derives their power from. And that's the reality. That's the divine, in contrast to the demoniac. So what we're hearing in the purport is, confronted with something that's perplexing, the demigods went to Lord Brahma, they went to the authority. So, that's something that an application point is for us, just like a child dependent upon their parent. They're literally dependent upon their parent. So that parents not only dutifully take care of the needs of their dependents, they invite souls to come and have that relationship where they're taking care of the needs of their dependents. And ultimately, Krishna conscious parents should deliver the soul to the spiritual realm. That's parenting. It's not an easy service, but it's the nature of the service. So devotees, we're sometimes taught, you know, don't bring your problems to Krishna. Don't ask Krishna for anything. Just say, I want to do some service. And that's a high position. Someone was sharing this with me, that their mother had taught them, don't go to God and pray for things. Well, this isn't exactly, pray for protection for sure, because that's the reality. It's mentioned in the purport, eating, sleeping, mating and defending or fearing or requiring protection. It's one of the limbs of surrender, is that Krishna is my protector. So if there's need for protection. During this weekend in Gitanagari, there were two groups of students. Some came from Boston, some came all the way from Atlanta. There were maybe a combination of 30 plus students. It's really nice. And a group from Atlanta, their leader told them, you got to chant japa for 1 hour, part of the rules of coming. Japa for 1 hour, and you wear tilak. And he explained that tilak is, he used the word kavacha. Kavacha means that it's a protection, a shield to keep you safe. So they learned how to apply tilak and chant for 1 hour. They did all kinds of other things, nice things. That's what tilak is. With mantras, not just smearing some clay on your body, but it's a mark along with mantra that provides protection. But the protection specifically is, just like our neck beats, Prabhupada's explanation, same as what Yamaraj told the Yamadutas. When you come across a living entity who has chanted the holy name of Narayana, don't touch them. And neckbeat says, hey, I'm a devotee. And tilak, this body is meant for the service of the Supreme Lord, because within the body there's a form of the Supreme Lord. So these are ways of divine behavior, and divine behavior rests ultimately upon divine consciousness, and divine consciousness leads to the spiritual realm. So now back to this, should we go to God for addressing what our needs are? Well, the higher sense is what we need is a connection with that Supreme, reviving our dormant Krishna consciousness. And along the way, there may be an emotion. Here this emotion is the demigods, they have a service of overseeing and supplying the necessities of the universe, and it's all darkness in all directions. So they're feeling fear. I plan to speak about this topic at the Detroit Temple on Sunday, about fear, overcoming fear. But here it is. So, fear, in short, fear is the consequence of absorption in the temporary, or absorption in illusion, or false ego. Having a misconception of reality and accepting non-reality as reality, and reality becoming obscured. You just don't know. And that's their situation. They don't know what's going on, all this darkness everywhere, what to do. So when there's knowledge, exactly what's happening here, when there's knowledge, their fear is dissipated. It's not just, you know, now we know the cause, but they also know the solution. They know that Lord Vishnu is going to address it. It took a while. It didn't the light's back on again. But they were protected. They were protected by that which is eternal, as opposed to some emotion connected with the temporary. The very practical application of this is the essential teaching of bhakti, anyavilasha tushunyam, jnana karma janavratam, Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam. Bhakti Uttama. Krishnanu Shilanam. So I'm going to develop this more Sunday evening, but just again a short version. Part of the from my exposure to Sanskrit, so some of you may have more than I do, but my exposure to, because of your growing up in India, but Shilanam, Shila, has to do with conduct. It's the general definition that I'm familiar with, conduct. Like, you know, Sadachar is a name for teaching Vaishnava etiquette. And Shilanam is Sadachar, or good conduct is Sadachar, Shilanam. But it's what you do, your behavior. But behavior has different levels. There's what your body does, and there's what your mind does, the contemplations within the mind, and then there's the emotions connected with the contemplations. Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, how does a living entity fall down? They contemplate objects. And behind the contemplation is the mood of being the enjoyer of the object. How am I going to enjoy this object? Or change it so it's not something unpleasant, because I don't like this bad smell or this bad look or this bad something. So I want to change it. So that's the thoughts in the mind. Then comes some emotion connected to the thoughts in the mind. I like it, I don't like it, I feel this, I feel that. And some attachment, this way or that way. And then when that happens, the intelligence is lost. Mind is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and we're in material consciousness again. Just by the contemplation of being of the object in the mood of being the enjoyer of the object. So what's required is to change, not stop contemplating. That's Buddhism. Don't have any thoughts. Become numb. The Vaishnava manner is change the contemplation to how can this be used in Krishna's service? Like family life. How can this be used in Krishna's service? Or anything. So here's demigods, and they have a service. And they see something, they're feeling something. They see something, they're contemplating that something, they're feeling something. And they take that feeling to the authority, to Lord Brahma. So that's what Vaishnavas do. Before your deity, or in your prayers, or the connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the emotional content goes to the Supreme Lord. Whatever the emotion is, good, bad, or mixed, you take that to the Supreme Lord. Just like a child. Somebody says something mean, they go to their parent. What happened? Just like Dhruva did. It's just so... to be a properly situated Vaishnava, not only it starts within the family, but it's within the community and within the world. Where what Srila Prabhupada wanted, part of his intention was to create first-class men in society that's degraded because it's Kali Yuga. And that first-class person is the Shrestha, it's the example-setter person. So part of our service to become Vaishnavas is to be exemplary Vaishnavas, to show by example, this is what it looks like. Here's the Bhagavad Gita, and here's a person who lives by Bhagavad Gita. This is what it looks like. And if there's something that doesn't conform with the scriptural teaching, we need to address that so that we can be the representative example in the world of Bhagavad Gita's message, because that's what we're meant to do. We're meant to please Krishna, serve Krishna, and in the bigger picture of things, show by example, as well as teach by precept, what the principle of pleasing Krishna is, including the emotional content of life. And that's bhakti. And as that disposition or behavior, that habit, that inclination to come before Krishna, just reading this letter from a young man, a 16-year-old in Hungary, writing about his experience of becoming his grandmother becoming a devotee, and his grandmother helping the whole family. She was like a terrorist. She had to chant or else and read Prabhupada's books, and, you know, in a Christian country. Amazing. And another message just came. Somebody in some temple somewhere, really new person, young American fellow, sitting before the deity during kirtan and just staring at the deity, and just, you know, for a long time. And somebody came over and asked him, you know, you're really fixed on seeing the deity. What do you see? He said, I see the deity dancing. Very charming. So, who knows? The desire to be connected to Krishna includes the simple point, includes our thoughts, these three things: the actions, the contemplations in the mind, and the emotions. And they're meant to be taken to Krishna and have Krishna address how they can be pleasing to him. And that way, this condition of fear, because fear is due to ignorance, fear of the unknown, fear of the temporary configuration of things is about to change, and I don't know what it's going to be. But we're not the controllers. Whatever it is, it's going to be. But so, that sense of, ultimately, that's what Brahma says in the previous chapter, Lord Vishnu, he's given us some service, and we're dependent upon him, and he's going to address this situation. So their fear subsided. A number of other examples. One of them, I just say one and then we'll stop. When Bhima didn't come back from that summer outing with the sons of Dhritarashtra and the sons of Pandu, Bhima didn't come back. And his mother, when Bhima didn't come back, was in big anxiety. What happened? What happened? So what did she do? She went to the authority. She went to Vidura. And Vidura, just Vidura's words completely pacified her. Vidura said, Vyasadeva can't be wrong. And Vyasadeva said, your sons will live a long life and will be very prosperous. So whatever happened, I don't know what happened, but whatever happened, it's going to be all right. Because Vyasadeva can't be wrong, etc. And her anxiety went away. Now, most mothers I know, if you just even give a reasonable explanation of something, they got to have, you know, the need met. Otherwise, but this is the nature of Kunti, just by hearing from Vyas, here, just the demigods, just by hearing from Lord Brahma, their fear was gone, the apprehension was gone. I mean, not like the problem was gone, but the apprehension was gone. And so they went about their duties in a peaceful state. Specifically, it says, so any discussion? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. As you mentioned about, like some people say that we should not ask something to Krishna. So could you elaborate on that? Like, do you endorse that or... how should be the mood?
I thought I addressed it. You know, we have to bring things to Krishna. In the mood of being his servant, not that he's the order supplier and here's my list, but is Krishna, if you so desire, this is something that's disturbing inside and I need your help. In the mode of service, like a dependent upon the person who's their protector. Okay. Yes?
I struggled with that when you explained the fear. You said that any emotion we approach the Lord, the content of the emotion.
Yeah. You repose it at his feet.
Every time I go with the smallest thing, I approach him, and then I say, as if I'm using him, because when it comes to chanting, my focus is not there, and I feel guilty about it.
Well, put the two together. Take your mind to the name. Practice that one. Don't feel guilty. Practice. We're weak. So it's easy to go ask for our needs, and it's another thing when we're not, you know, so it's just, we're weak. We just, so you practice and you become strong. It's the primary principle that you should practice. It's not stop the other one because it makes you feel guilty. Reinvest over here. And every day. The sadness isn't going to help you. Taking shelter will help you. Okay. Srila Prabhupada? Yes? Yes?
Do you think this point about intelligence being lost, like when we are in that state of being in a panic? So one of the things is happening because of so much of investment in the feeling or the emotion.
Yes. Yes,
kind of
exactly, exactly.
And then you were talking about these intermediate steps that, this example of Queen Kunti, because of her intelligence being strong, just by the hearing, she could revive that intelligence.
Yeah. Her faith, her devotion, mm-hmm. her bhakti, her spiritual strength. Mm-hmm. She had become bewildered, but very quickly reinstated. Yeah.
Then one of my understanding is that like one point you made in one of the classes about Gopinath Acharya's story, that the past time when you were emphasizing that this aspect of Chaya mercy, that relief in one sense that comes, if we are just hoping for the relief, we are, and it may come from the authority too, but if the focus was relief, not shelter, then at one level we miss
the shelter. Yes, that's material. Mm-hmm. Now, there can be a mix of spiritual material we want and we also want. And to the degree that there's a mix, it's unsteady and not satisfying. we're not contented, and then it goes back to the other position because it's moved by the modes of nature. It goes back to the other position, and there we are again. So when we see ourselves doing that, do a timeout and pause and say, this is my situation. Let me try to strengthen over on this side. Not like deny that the other side is there, but try to strengthen on the spiritual side. Let Krishna be pleased side. Okay. See the Prabhupada key? Yeah?
Okay. We just talked about taking all our concerns which we have to Krishna. And we do this, that okay, we go and tell to the deity at the temple, okay, or our deities at home, that okay, this is a problem that I am going through and everything. And when we don't see anything changing, what should we do?
Be patient. And look inside, and consider, just like this question here, is the orientation that I'm having one of shelter taking or one of order supplying? Is the relationship simply order supplying relationship? I have this requisition slip, I'm requesting at least some of these things, please. So, is it a relationship where is it a business relationship or is it a service relationship?
And at what point should we share that with devotees or mentors or Guru Maharaj?
It depends. I mean, important, really important ones. Fine. Especially, you know, ones that are recurring. And then, again, the purpose of sharing is not, you know, please fix the problem. And if you don't fix it, if I don't see the problem is getting fixed, there's something wrong with you. I mean, I'm not saying that you think that way, but, you know, it comes back to this. Is the expectation simply, you know, the problem has a solution, or is the expectation to be in a relationship? And then, so, but in other words, how open and closed is the heart? What's the nature of the heart? Is the heart open to a relationship? Is the heart open to seeing someone as an order supplier? So, back to your question, what if you don't see some change? And is it okay to share these things? Where do we open it up to with Vaishnavas? It's very valuable. You could say it's even maybe a little stronger. Practically essential, at least very important, that there's somebody, mentor, friend, or a combination of persons that you can on a regular basis, or at least on, you know, you feel the safety to open your heart completely to such a person without any fear, without any expectation. So it's good to have such relationships, and the frequency depends on the magnitude of what's going on. Okay?
Because personally we feel the magnitude is big, but you know, we're...
Yeah, that's because we're self-centered. Largely. I mean, some things are big, but that so many things are always big, that's the picture of life gets shrunk when we're centered in selfishness or false ego. And the picture gets much lighter and brighter and broad when the connection with Krishna, the spiritual conception of life, becomes restored. Then everything takes its proper perspective. Now there are things that are important, and things that are mega important. And then we take them in stride because of that Krishna-centeredness and spiritual conception. Just, that's the dynamic. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.